And who doesn't love a good Easter ham? All right, welcome here this morning. My name is Kevin. I am also one of the pastors here. And now it's my turn. He is risen. That is one of my favorite parts of Easter. Some of the other things that I love about Easter, I didn't make it into Matthew's video, but I love that spring is here. I love that. I love the flowers. I love the colors. I love the candy. But here's actually probably my favorite thing about Easter. So I have two sons, and when my sons were small, we started doing Easter egg hunts, and one of the very first Easters, they found candy hiding on the ceiling fan in our family room. So I want you to imagine 3 and 5-year-old Caleb and Liam are searching for all their Easter candy on Easter morning, and at some point they look up and they notice that their big chocolate bunnies are hiding on the blades of the ceiling fan above them. And so they start jumping. Their bodies are small. They did not make it. And so then they grabbed their stuffed animals, and they started throwing their stuffed animals to try and get these chocolate bunnies down, and that didn't work. And so they got a broom, and they started swinging a broom at it, and that didn't work. And then I think it was Caleb said, "Liam, go turn on the ceiling fan." So Liam ran over, and he hit the switch, and the fan started to move. And it starts off slow. But as it gets faster, the Easter bunnies start becoming slightly dislodged, and they start moving a little bit. And as the fan's going faster and faster, eventually these chocolate bunnies fly off of the fan and smash into the wall and break into pieces, and it was awesome. That was a memorable Christmas morning. That's the second time I've called it Christmas today. I'm sorry about that. It's definitely Easter. But because my kids were so impressed with Easter bunnies being hidden on the ceiling fan, every Easter since then, there has been candy hiding on that ceiling fan. My kids are now in their 20s, and I think I saw some candy on that fan before I came to church this morning. That's how long we've been doing it. It's crazy how an event, how a moment in time can change everything that comes after that. That's actually what Easter is. Easter is remembering that there was a time, that there was an event, that there was an actual moment where everything changed. That at a specific point in time, Jesus actually rose from the dead. In doing so, he conquered death and the grave and the hold that sin had on our lives, and it changed everything. Jesus defeated the grave. He rose victorious, and it created a way for us to know God. It created a way for us to be known by God. And in that one day, that one Sunday morning, nearly 2,000 years ago, the resurrection changed everything. That's going to be our theme this morning. The resurrection changed everything. Thank you to the families that read the Easter story for us this morning. As a church, we've been going through the book of Luke, and so we're looking at the Easter story as it's found in the book of Luke. And it's been read, but I'm going to kind of go through it and expand upon it a little bit. So let's go back and look at it, starting in chapter 24, where it says, "On the first day of the week, very early in the morning, the women took spices they had prepared and went to the tomb. They found the stone rolled away from the tomb, but when they entered, they did not find the body of the Lord Jesus." Now, it's important to know that these were the women who followed Jesus. These were actually disciples of Jesus who stayed by him until his death. They saw his violent and horrible crucifixion, and they knew that people who die deaths like that stay dead. So they're going to the tomb to care for his body that Easter morning. And they're going with spices. That would be like us going to the graveside of someone that we knew or loved and bringing a nice spread of flowers to leave at the gravestone. See, the women weren't expecting to find an empty tomb. So imagine their thoughts and emotions when they show up and the stone has been rolled away and the body of the Lord Jesus is missing. They would have felt sadness, horror, indignation, anger even. Their first thoughts are not that he is alive. It's confusion. It says they wondered what had happened. And so this is what happens in verse 4. It says, "While they were wondering about this, suddenly two men in clothes that gleamed like lightning stood beside them. In their fright, the women bowed down with their faces to the ground. But the men said to them, 'Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here. He is risen.'" Later in the chapter, Luke calls these two men angels. So we know that they are divine messengers with a divine message for these women. Before his death, Jesus said that he was going to rise from the dead. He actually said it a couple of times. So why was it a surprise? Well, it was a surprise because they were witnesses to his death. They saw his broken body. So it's actually easy to understand why they don't immediately remember this teaching of Jesus or that he had said this. N.T. Wright says, it was simply that nobody had ever dreamed that one single living person would be killed stone dead and then raised to a new sort of bodily life the other side of the grave while the rest of the world carried on as before. But the angel announces this truth that has changed the course of human history. Jesus is not in the tomb. Jesus is alive. He is risen. He is risen indeed. And this is the hope of all humankind. This is the basis for our faith in God. This is why we know that there is no end to life when we follow Jesus, that death is not the end, that there is life after death, that there is resurrection life with Christ. That was Jesus' message while he was still alive and with the people. But it seemed impossible to believe. It was impossible. So it goes on to say, this is what the angel says. He says, remember how he told you while he was still with you in Galilee, the Son of Man must be delivered over to the hands of sinners, be crucified, and on the third day be raised again. Then they remembered his words. When they came back from the tomb, they told all these things to the 11 and to the others. It was Mary Magdalene, Joanna, Mary, the mother of James, and the others with them who told this to the apostles. But they did not believe the women, because their words seemed like nonsense to them. See, even though Jesus had spoken of his own resurrection many times in the book of Luke, nobody had really heard what he was saying. They weren't listening. They thought that he was speaking in metaphors or riddles. No one thought that he was being literal about dying on a cross and rising from the dead. It seemed impossible. But when prompted by the angels, the women remember the words of Jesus, and so they rush to tell the disciples. I think it's so cool that it's the women who are the first evangelists in the Bible. They're the first to announce the good news of Jesus. And it's actually the 11 disciples of Jesus who are the first skeptics, the first to not believe the good news of the resurrection. The women believe it. The 11 do not. It says in verse 12, Peter, however, got up and ran to the tomb. Bending over, he saw the strips of linen lying by themselves, and he went away wondering to himself what had happened. Other translations say that Peter went away marveling at what had happened or amazed at what had happened. David Garland says that the Greek word used here is a verb to describe a positive response to a wondrous event. Something wonderful has happened. It doesn't make sense to Peter yet, but it's a very positive word that is used here. Something amazing has happened. See, Peter entered the tomb of Jesus one way, and he left the tomb completely changed. And we're going to talk about this in the weeks to come. We're going to have a few sermons as we finish off the book of Luke about how Jesus interacts with his disciples and followers after his resurrection. But in that moment, the resurrection changed everything. I want to share with you how the resurrection changed things for people in our story and how it changes things for us today. The women, they approached the tomb with mourning, with sadness. They approached the tomb heartbroken. But they left the tomb because they were the first to realize that death was not the end for Jesus. They left with rejoicing because the resurrection changed everything for them. Peter is the man who denied Jesus three times. After the resurrection, he went on to lead the church. And he healed people, and he told so many people about the good news of Jesus, and he faithfully followed Jesus to the end. The resurrection changed everything for Peter. After the resurrection, the disciples, who all deserted Jesus on the night of his arrest, they followed Jesus for the rest of their lives and dedicated themselves to telling anyone who would listen the good news about Jesus. Many of them faced violent deaths because of their faith, but all of them faced death with confidence and assurance that death would not be the end, because the resurrection changed everything. Later in the New Testament, there's a man named Saul, who is a persecutor of the church. He actually helped arrest and murder people who followed Jesus. But he met the resurrected Jesus one day, and it changed everything for him. He became Paul, a follower of Jesus. He wrote much of the New Testament, and like the disciples, he became an apostle who spent the rest of his life telling everyone how Jesus was the resurrected king. The good news of the resurrection changed everything for Paul. So how does the resurrection change things for us today? What does it mean for us to have resurrected lives? I believe it means new life. It means new life both now and for eternity. Next week, we're actually going to have a baptism here on Sunday morning. Our services are usually at 10:30, and so we'll have a 10:30 service tomorrow or next week, and we're going to have a baptism, and we're going to hear someone share their testimony, their witness of their experience with Jesus, and we're going to watch them go into the waters as a symbol of dying to their old life, of being buried in the earth, and then coming out of the waters of baptism as a new creation, like coming out of the tomb with Jesus. So I encourage you to come next week and see this baptism. But for now, I want you to know that Jesus' resurrection and victory means that you are never alone. That God is with you no matter what you're going through. You have the presence, the intimacy, and the love of a God who is near you and close to you at all times. You have access at all moments to the throne room of God. That is a beautiful and amazing thing. And I know that in my life, that has meant everything for me, that knowing God has allowed me to face obstacles that I am sure would have destroyed me without him. It means that we can always approach God, that he will never abandon us, that he will never ignore us. It means that we always have access to God. That's what happened at the resurrection. Also, Jesus' resurrection means that we actually receive Christ's holiness. It gets placed on us like a covering. On my own, I often define myself by my failures or my shortcomings or the areas where I feel lacking. But having Christ's holiness on me means that when God looks at me, when God looks at you, he doesn't see your shortcomings, he doesn't see your sin, he doesn't see your failures and your mistakes. He sees you as a beloved son or daughter, as a beloved child of God. He delights in you and cherishes you the way a loving parent loves their children. And the resurrection also means that we have the Spirit of God living in us. Before the cross, we were powerless to the hold that sin had on our lives, but now we have the power of Christ. That same power lives in you and me, and it's beautiful. I was thinking about the story with the fan and the Easter, and I was thinking about how far my family has come in almost 20 years. And when I look back on that and see how God has accomplished more in and through us than we could have ever done on our own, and that is the power of Christ living in us. That same power that raised Christ from the dead lives in you and all who follow Jesus. It means that God can break the strongholds in your life, that he wants to bring about life and freedom where there is death and brokenness, freedom from sin, freedom from shame, freedom from addiction, from ruin, from things that bring death. The resurrection can change those things into things of life. Because of the resurrection, it means that we too will be raised to new life. For those who love and follow Jesus, death will not have the final say. Death will not have the final victory. New life awaits, resurrection life awaits, and the Bible says it's going to be beautiful and beyond anything we could hope for or imagine. Life with God in the presence of Jesus, where pain and sickness, depression, addiction, broken relationships, all those things give way to joy, to freedom, to life, and to love. How I long for a resurrection body, for a new heavenly body where that hope carries me through my darkest nights with confidence and hope and joy because of what God has in store for us. The resurrection means that what is dead can come to life again. Like a cross that is meant to be an instrument of torture and death, life can come from it. We have a cross here. A cross was originally meant to be an instrument of execution and torture. It's a symbol of death. It's a symbol of punishment. But because of Jesus' work on the cross, we can remember the cross as something beautiful, as something that actually gives life, something that brings hope. In a moment, we are going to transform this cross. I'm going to invite the worship team to come up now. And in just a moment, the band is going to play and lead us in a few worship songs. And what I'm going to ask you to do is to come to the front. We have a whole bunch of flowers here. Some of them are in a nice arrangement and they're like attached. Don't take those ones. But we have a whole bunch of tulips and daffodils here that we would love for you to take and bring to the cross and just put in the cross. So you'll come to the front. We'll have time for all of you to do this. You'll just put a flower in the cross. And together, we're going to take a symbol that was intended for death and transform it into a symbol of life. If we all come at once, there's going to be a big traffic jam, and that's okay. If we have a traffic jam, don't worry, we're going to get through it. We're going to play three songs, and it takes us about 13 to 15 minutes to get through three songs. So there's going to be enough time for all of us to come to the front, to take a flower. You could actually probably take two flowers if you wanted and put them in the cross. And I am going to ask that if you're in the balcony that you come down either the stairwell in the back or the one on this side, and that if you're on the main floor, you come in through these aisles and that we actually exit through this aisle and you can return to the balcony through the stairwell closest to the cross. But as you come forward, take a flower, take two flowers, and let's transform the cross together. Together, the cross and empty tomb are the defining point of history. Everything changed that first Easter. So the question for us today is, how is the resurrection changing us? How are we being transformed? Does it change how we treat our family, our friends? Does it change how we spend our energy, our time, our money? Does what Jesus has done, does it change how we see other people, that he gave their life for our enemies, the people that we get angry at, the people we can despise? God has given them the image of himself. Does it change how we see ourselves? Do you see yourself as a beloved child of God? Does it change your own identity, your own purpose, knowing that God has placed his righteousness on you? Does the resurrection change your priorities, your values, your actions? And does the resurrection change the posture in which we approach God? That we can approach him with confidence. I love this quote that says, "For people of the resurrection, death becomes a doorway out of which new life emerges. So we do not pine for a return to normal as our deliverance, but we long for a resurrection that overshadows the old life. A crisis might not be a grave, but a womb. Our resilience comes from our theology of the resurrection. The resurrection changes everything, and so, Lord, may it change us too." So starting right now, the worship team is going to lead us in three songs. You're invited to come to the front, take a flower or two, transform the cross together, and at the end, we will have taken something intended for death and transformed it into an image and a symbol of life. So please, come forward.